Welcome, welcome, welcome. Glad you're joining us today. I want to take you to the book of Luke, chapter 23, and verse 39. Luke chapter 23 and verse 39. So one of the criminals hanging beside him scoffed. "So you're the Messiah, are you? Prove it by saving yourself, and us too, while you're at it." But the other criminal protested, "Don't you fear God even when you have been sentenced to die? We deserve to die for our crimes, but this man hasn't done anything wrong." Then he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." And Jesus replied, "I assure you, today you will be with me in paradise." The thief on the cross has been talked about for many years. Movies have been made about him. He's been venerated, which means highly revered, in the Catholic Church. He's been the topic of numerous Bible studies in just about all Protestant religions, as well as the basis for many Christian songs. What is it about him that makes us so curious? He was a thief, a criminal, and most likely had been arrested this last time for his part in Barabbas' little insurrection, which is a violent uprising against authority. Who cares about him? I don't know. We do, apparently. Perhaps what draws our attention to him is the fact that he had before been railing on Christ, just as the others had been, as we learn from the accounts in Matthew and Mark, poking at who Jesus was supposed to be and shouting their disbelief at it in the form of insults. What he was so capable of doing to others, he can't do himself. "I thought you were the Son of God, but right now you're nothing but a loser. Why don't you put your money where your mouth is and come down from the cross and bring us with you?" That's my 2023 paraphrase of what you read right there. If the same situation were happening today, I suspect it might have sounded something like that. He goes from railing on Jesus to confessing him, all within a relatively short amount of time, about 3 hours. And Jesus accepts him. And that's why I think we like him. We like the tenderness conveyed by the end of the story. We like the fact that they both embraced each other during their hours on the cross. I think we like the idea of Jesus still extending compassion and forgiveness to someone who just a short time before had been among his biggest enemies, realizes that he is wrong, confesses that, and is accepted by Jesus. You know, Jesus could have said, I guess, "I want to see how you behave for a week before I make my final decision." The thief didn't have a week for penance. He was down to his last moments, for that matter, so was Jesus. But Jesus doesn't tell him, "Sorry, too little, too late, because you're out of time to prove it to me. I would, but, you know, look at you." He accepts him anyway, even when the thief had nothing more than that confession and statement of faith that he could give to Jesus. And I think we like him so much because we figure that if Jesus can do that with the thief, then he can do that with us. As incredibly faulty and imperfect people, we really like the idea of a second chance. And some of us really like the idea of a third and fourth chance. Some of us need a third and fourth chance. And so we like this thief because we think that if Jesus can do that with him, then he can do it with me. And you know what? We're right. I hope that by the end of this message that we will all understand that there really is no limit to the grace of God, and that God can recognize an honest heart from which comes an honest confession, and he rewards that honesty and sincerity no matter the situation and no matter what kind of time may be left. What was happening to the thief during those 3 hours? Well, his heart was being broken. He goes from railing on Christ and insulting him to confessing him as Lord. What made him do that? It was like a complete transformation. What was it that broke his heart? Simply put, he spent some time in the presence of Jesus, and that has been known to lead to a complete transformation in people's lives. Friend, spend even just a little bit of time with Jesus and you will learn something about him and from him. Once you close your own mouth and just listen to the character and voice of Jesus, it will have an effect on your heart. Once the thief stopped talking and railing and just listened, he started being changed. And I think that so many more people in this world would be receptive to the gospel and to the idea of surrendering their lives to Christ and would be changed if they would just shut up and listen. But a lot of people have a lot to say, especially about religion and God and Jesus, and they will say it, but you can't hear when you're talking, except yourself, but others get drowned out and left behind. Friends, we have to stop talking so we can hear. The thief had a lot to say in the beginning, but when he stopped talking, he was able to hear, and what he heard started breaking him down and ultimately led to his salvation. Whoever has ears, let them hear, is repeated several times in Revelation, and Jesus used those words in the Gospels. Personally, I also like to add to that, and whoever has a mouth, let them shut it. But God is a lot nicer than I am, so he left that part out. But the thief caught on. What could he have possibly been hearing that was breaking him down? Was Jesus up there preaching from the cross? I don't think so, because physically he wasn't able to. Even what little he was saying took a great amount of effort. But there was something that must have happened that took him from who he was in the beginning to who he was at the end. And I have some ideas on that, if you're willing to listen to them. I'm going to keep talking anyways, whether you listen or not. But during his time on the cross, he obviously saw something in Jesus that convinced him. He seems to have had some measure of the fear of God. Probably before this, because of what he says to the other thief, "Don't you fear God, seeing that you are under the same sentence?" Not something that someone is likely to say if they don't believe in God. Now, how much of a relationship with God he may have had, I don't know. It seems likely that he doesn't believe in Jesus as the Son of God at the beginning, but I would wager that he seems to know and have some measure of respect for the Old Testament God. Now, what went wrong and how he became a thief, I also don't know, but even those who fear God fall into traps laid by the devil, and they do some things that they may not have originally intended or saw themselves as doing, and that they are not proud of. Nobody's perfect, and that goes for God-fearing people as well. Something about Jesus must have started chipping away at that fear of God and started bringing it to the surface. Maybe it was a prayer that Jesus was praying. The only ones we have recorded are, "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing," and, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." But maybe there was more that Jesus was praying. It wouldn't surprise me. What we have recorded in the Gospels is not necessarily all that happened. In fact, the end of the book of John clearly indicates that there's so much more that took place and that Jesus did and that he said that just simply isn't possible to be written down. So I doubt that what we have recorded in the Gospels for what happened on the cross, I doubt that that's all that happened. In fact, I would stake my reputation of whatever reputation that is, I don't know, but I would stake my reputation on it that we have only a glimpse of it. So no doubt, I'm sure that there was more that Jesus was saying. Again, I doubt that he was preaching a 45-minute sermon because that would have required a lot more energy than he had. Bottom line is we don't know, and all we can do is speculate, but I can tell you this. There are a lot of people who have a fear of God. They believe in God, but obedience to God sometimes trips them up. Allowing the fear of God to produce a wise way of living for them has just not happened yet because they have too many other things that they're trying to hold on to. Proverbs 9:10 says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom." But that has to be an active fear. But if those people would just spend some quiet time in the presence of Jesus, he can chip away at the barrier that they have constructed between their hearts and their fear of God, and they can turn their hearts back to him. And if anyone will spend enough quiet time in the presence of Jesus, they can learn something about him, and they can find a fear of God being created in them, and they can turn their hearts to him. I think what the thief learned about Jesus that day is that he is gentle and humble. Jesus said in Matthew 11:29, "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart." And I think that's what he learned about Jesus. Every facet of Jesus' behavior during his trial and his execution was gentle and humble. And I wonder if when they were placing him on the cross, if he didn't willingly stretch out his hands to right where they needed to be. The thief, if physically capable, would have probably resisted. Who in his position wouldn't resist? But I'm not sure that Jesus would have. The thief learned about Jesus that day that he was gentle and humble, as one would expect the Messiah and the Son of God to be. Now, this next bit is total speculation, but stay with me here. It would not surprise me if the thieves were hurling insults and epithets and curses at the soldiers, at the ones who put them on the cross. It's normal for people in those positions to exhibit hate and bitterness towards their, let's just call them accusers. It's not uncommon in courtrooms to see someone shout curses and epithets at the judge who just passed sentence or at the jury who just voted to convict, and you can hear them yelling threats and rants all the way down the hallway to the hallway to their cell. And it's very possible that the thieves may have been doing this. And yet we know that Jesus wouldn't have been. We saw that already from previous behavior. If you turn with me, if you're following along, to 1 Peter 2 and verse 21. It says, "For God called you to do good, even if it means suffering, just as Christ suffered for you. He is your example, and you must follow in his steps. He never sinned, nor ever deceived anyone. He did not retaliate when he was insulted, which he was a lot, nor threaten revenge when he suffered, which he did tremendously. He left his case in the hands of God, who always judges fairly." And I'll tell you how I know this. How I know that Jesus wouldn't have been railing all these epithets and curses and everything. Jesus wasn't cowardly. It's not like he didn't know what to say. But because he had the power with mere words to bring that whole trial to a close and to silence all the enemies and to bring the whole world to its knees in reverence before him, he kept his own mouth shut. Because he wasn't there to bring the whole world to its knees. He was there to save the entire world from its sins, to save them from themselves. The thief would have noticed Jesus' silence. He would have seen that Jesus was exhibiting no signs of hate or bitterness towards his accusers. And he may have been thinking, "Didn't anyone teach this guy how to be a criminal? For crying out loud, say something! They nailed your limbs, not your mouth, so use it!" Jesus truly was gentle and humble in heart, even in his dying moments. And eventually, that started breaking the thief's heart, because he started seeing Jesus for who he really was. And then he saw himself for who he really was. They may have been dying the same death, but they were dying for two completely different reasons. One was dying as a criminal. One was dying as the Son of God. One was dying as a sinner, one as the one who was going to save sinners. And the thief in that moment knew that. He knew that he was a sinner, and he knew that he has been in the presence of Jesus. And while he knows his earthly life is now nearly over, he starts thinking about the next life. As he says, "Lord, remember me when you come into your kingdom." That Jesus had a kingdom, he was convinced, and that Jesus had power and authority in that kingdom, he was also convinced. What he may have been a little less convinced of was whether or not he was going to be able to go to that kingdom himself. He does not say, "Lord, bring me to your kingdom with you." He doesn't even ask, "Lord, where am I going when I die?" He merely asks for a remembrance. Because I may be a lost cause. I mean, just a few hours ago, I was railing on you, and my confession, my repentance may be a little bit too late, but even if that should be the case, and even if I wake up in the next few minutes in a Christless hell, it may be of some comfort to me to know that Jesus remembers me, and at this point, that is all I will ask for. And so he makes his request, but Jesus gives him more than he asked for. And friend, this is where the story of the thief on the cross really becomes important to us. This is where the grace of God really shines out. Because the thoughts that I propose the thief may have had about being a lost cause may be thoughts that you have had, or maybe do have, or maybe someone you know has. Friend, all of you need to know that in the eyes of God, there is no such thing as a lost cause. He asks Jesus, and Jesus gives him so much more than he dared to ask for. He dare not ask for entrance into that kingdom. He dare not ask for heaven. He dares to ask only for a remembrance. And Jesus looks at him and says, "Friend, I'm not going to remember you. I won't need to remember you because you and I are going to be together." I don't care if you blossomed 20 years ago or if you only blossomed 20 minutes ago. Any confession of faith that is sincere, any turning towards God that is truly sincere, will get the same reward. When it comes to the grace of God, there is no limitation. The only limits with the grace of God is from ourselves. And I don't care what your story is, what you have done, or why you did it, or whether you're living in obedience to the gospel, or whether you're not living in obedience to the gospel, or whether you don't want to obey, or you do, but you haven't been doing a very good job of it. Friend, you need to quit telling yourself that He can't save you, because He can. You need to shut up long enough to be able to hear it. That's the problem with this world. It won't shut up. It likes to talk. And it likes to talk about how God is to blame for what's wrong in the world. They like to talk about how morality and right is whatever we say it is. They like to talk about how they haven't really done anything that bad, and so they don't really need God, blah, blah, blah. They like to talk about how they have everything under control, even though they fail to consider that without God, they wouldn't even take a single breath in the morning. We need to shut up so we can hear. The thief was able to hear when he stopped talking, when he stopped shouting, and what he heard saved his soul. And I am inviting all of us together, right now, to shut up. Because Jesus has something very important that He wants to say, and it is the same thing that He said from the cross when He spoke to this thief. There is nobody that I cannot reach, nobody that I cannot save, and nobody that I cannot take with me to heaven. But we cannot delay. Those who are faced with the error of their ways, who have looked at themselves after looking at who Jesus is and have seen a life filled and polluted with sin, those who have seen the real condition of their heart and have seen it blackened by the lies and schemes of the devil of which they have been a participant, are wise to feel an urgency and persistence in asking our Lord to forgive and cleanse and remove those sins, to replace the pollution with purity and the hatred and strife with love and tenderness and the lies with truth, and to obey the gospel through which a person finds his salvation. The thief knew his time was up. He knew that today had to be the day, because tomorrow was something he was not going to have. I got a couple of scriptures I want to read for you. 2 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse number 2. For God says, at just the right time I heard you. On the day of salvation I helped you. Indeed, the right time is now. Today is the day of salvation. And in the book of Hebrews chapter 3 and verse 12. Be careful then, dear brothers and sisters. Make sure that your own hearts are not evil and unbelieving, turning you away from the living God. You must warn each other every day while it is still today, so that none of you will be deceived by sin and hardened against God. For if we are faithful to the end, trusting God just as firmly as when we first believed, we will share in all that belongs to Christ. Remember what it says, today when you hear His voice, don't harden your hearts as Israel did when they rebelled. Today is the day of salvation. Today, if you hear His voice, which you are if you've opened your ears and your hearts and closed your mouth, friend, do not delay to do what you know you need to do. When we commit our lives to Him, when we ask Him through baptism to forgive us, to cleanse our hearts, He gives us so much more than just what we ask. He gives us peace, which is an obvious byproduct of having one's sins forgiven. But He also gives us His constant attention and care, help in our everyday lives, grace and mercy in those times when we make a mistake, when we allow ourselves to get caught up in a situation and we have a bad attitude, we do something bad, we say something bad, when we're led away by our own sinful desires and our actions turn into full-grown sin. And He gives us an eternal home. A glorious heaven where we will be ultimately and entirely and for the first time from all of the temptations and perils that come with being a human life, totally free. And we will see Him face to face, and this time we will live. A quick Old Testament reference for you in Exodus 33. Verse 19, the Lord replied, I will make all my goodness pass before you. He's talking to Moses. And I will call out my name, Yahweh, before you. For I will show mercy to anyone I choose, and I will show compassion to anyone I choose. But you may not look directly at my face, for no one may see me and live. Because the greatness of the majesty and the glory of God is such that no human could look at it and live. But those days are going to change, and what a day that is going to be. The thief's encounter with Jesus teaches us that no matter who you are, no matter what you have done, Jesus is full of mercy and compassion and forgiveness, and there's never a day when he can't do this. For crying out loud, he did it with the thief as he was dying himself. Even on his really bad days, Jesus can still do it. And even the hardest of sinners, if they soften their hearts and confess their sins to Christ and confess Christ, will be brought into paradise with him, their souls and their consciences freed. Now, I haven't said much about the other thief, but I'm going to now because he has an important part in the story as well. What we have in the two thieves is the response of the cross. And there are only two responses you can give. You accept it, as the penitent thief came to do, or you reject it to the very end, as presumably the other thief did. There's no middle ground. There is no other alternative. Jesus was the one hanging in the middle. And you will either be on his right or on his left. You will be on the side that accepts him or rejects him. One final passage for you, 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 18. The message of the cross is foolish to those who are headed for destruction, but we who are being saved know it is the very power of God. Those are your two options right there. You either believe the cross is foolishness and you reject it as such and you will die in that rejection, or you believe it is the power of God and it will save you. And I ask all of us right now, today, as we are wherever we are, wherever you are listening to this, whether you're in your home or your car, if that's possible, since this is supposed to be on the internet, whether you're somehow streaming this into your church, I don't know, but wherever you are, today as you do whatever you are doing, as you listen to me ramble on, I want to ask all of us right now, on which side of the cross are you? Most writers tend to put the penitent thief on the right side of Jesus for the obvious reasons, and who knows on what side he really was, but if you want to go with the right side, that's fine, let's go with it. Today, as you hear the message of the cross, are you on the right side or are you on the left? Are you with those who accept it and live, or are you with those who reject it and die? Jesus was the one in the middle. That is undisputable fact. It's written down. And in life, Jesus is still in the middle. And every person, every soul in the world is on either side of him. So I want to know, and more importantly, Jesus wants to know, which side are you on?